Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now is Derek Shearer, a former U.S. ambassador to Finland, who is currently a professor of diplomacy and world affairs at Occidental College, where he serves as director of the McKinnon Center for Global Affairs. Welcome to Background Briefing, Derek Shearer.
Thank you, Ian.
And you organized, when you were U.S. ambassador to Finland under President Clinton, you organized a summit in Helsinki between Boris Yeltsin and Bill Clinton. It was an odd summit because Yeltsin apparently had just had a minor stroke, and the idea was that the president of Finland suggested that they could host it because Yeltsin may not be up for a long plane ride. And of course, Clinton himself had a golfing accident, so he was in a wheelchair. So tell us about what happened there behind the scenes, and I guess put this in the context, if you will, of what seems to be a fairly hastily planned, if planned at all, summit between President Trump and Vladimir Putin in Helsinki on July the 16th after the NATO summit.
Right. Well, Ian, the context was and is very different. I mean, this was the immediate post-Cold War period where we were dealing with a number of important issues raised by the end of the Soviet Union and the independence of Russia and the Eastern European countries and the Baltic states. And we had regularized meetings between Yeltsin and Clinton to deal with these issues, particularly issues of controlling nuclear weapons. And I had a very close working relationship with President Ahtisaari in Finland. And so what we were trying to do was to further cooperation on very serious issues between Russia and the U.S. And so it was very helpful to us that President Ahtisaari actually called me on my private phone on a Sunday and offered the Finnish White House, called Mantaniemi, for the meetings. And I forwarded that offer on to the White House. They checked with Russia, and then they accepted. And so we did host a summit with close cooperation from the Finns, and I can tell you a bit about what we achieved at it, but it was a serious working relationship between us, the Finns, and the Russians, and that's certainly not the situation today.
So in terms of the Trump-Putin summit, the information we have on the last time they met is not very reassuring. There was virtually nobody there in the meeting, no note taker. The Russians apparently objected to the idea of Fiona Hill being there, the National Security Council member, who is a Russian expert and speaks Russian. So will this be the same deal, you know, where you just don't know what goes on? There's no notes?
Well, my view is it's going to be theater, and in fact may be very bad theater, because Trump's going to be coming off a meeting with NATO allies, and he's already said in public and then in written form, severe criticisms of our NATO allies. He's, of course, criticized the EU. Finland's a member of the EU, by the way, a very active and close member. And so you have Trump coming as someone whom you could imagine Putin thanking him, in private for undermining the Western alliance. And, of course, Trump could then thank Putin for helping him get elected. So it's, it's a situation where you have two bad actors, but who want to be seen as players on the international stage, and they're using this meeting, not unlike Kim Jong-un and Trump, to suggest through theater but not actual achievement that they are important people. Now, they represent important countries, but are they trying to achieve anything tangible other than promote themselves? I don't think so.
Right, but neither the Singapore summit or this forthcoming Helsinki summit would be happening but for the fact that it's Donald Trump who is putting Kim Jong-un on the world stage as an equal player, and he's doing the same with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, and that's what I meant by saying, sadly we have an American president who's a bad actor. He's promoting people who are not Democrats. He's undermining Democratic alliances. And he's doing it mainly, to show that somehow he is the man in the world. He can go against recent American history, alliances, and he seems more comfortable, with people who aren't Democrats. He seemed rather wistful, about how Kim Jong-un had dealt with his own relatives and opponents. We know that Trump is not democratic in his impulse or his actions at home. We don't know, and maybe some of your other guests will suggest, what the Russians might actually have on Trump that makes him so amenable to Putin. I think at the very least, we do know from the public record that the Trump enterprises have been financed largely by Russian sources for many years. So, you know, there are these ongoing relationships, and how that, you know, plays out in these kinds of events, we don't know yet. I think Bob Mueller's investigating it.
Preceding you on today's program, Ambassador Scherer, I was speaking with the veteran CIA officer, Bob Baer, about what he thinks is behind this relationship between Putin and Trump that appears to have very, very deep ties. It's very hard to understand what's going on because, for example, before the G7, the Brits wanted to have a G7 resolution against Russia because of the use of weapon of mass destruction on British soil. And suddenly Trump preempts that by announcing that Putin should be let back into the G7 before the meeting itself. And it almost feels like Putin is pulling the strings there. It's a very strange situation, I must say. But the former Secretary of State, obviously you dealt with her. She was at the summit that you organized in Helsinki in 1997. Madeleine Albright, in an interview with the BBC, just asked whether Trump is a fascist. She said no, but he's the most undemocratic president in the modern era. And then the U.S. ambassador to Estonia just quit in disgust, saying for the president to say the EU was a setup to take advantage of the United States to attack our piggy bank and that NATO is as bad as NAFTA is not only factually wrong, but proves to me that it's time to go. So as a former diplomat, how do you think the professionals in what's left of our State Department, how are they handling this situation where they have a president who seems to be working against the interests of the United States in lockstep with Putin?
Well, as you say, Ian, many top diplomats have quit. They just said they can't serve him, including our respected ambassador to Estonia. And I think, you know, this is an interesting situation for the Finnish government and for the Finns, because as I point out, you know, during the Cold War, it was one thing for Finland to play a more neutral role and to host these kind of meetings. But the Cold War is over. Finland's a member of the EU. It's supposedly a leading, you know, democratic country. And I'm curious to see how Finnish civil society responds to the meeting. I've had, you know, inquiries from Finnish friends. I have two Finnish-American grandkids. And I'm hoping that the Finns are known for some very wicked humor, that the Finnish civil society will show up and greet the two men in appropriate fashion, because I don't think anybody should pretend that this is like a serious, you know, Cold War meeting anymore. And I certainly agree with Madeleine Albright about how undemocratic Trump is. We know how undemocratic Putin is. And the best thing is not to really take the meeting seriously, but to see what kind of response we can get from citizens.
So do you think that there's any way to get the American people, who by and large are not particularly interested in foreign affairs and more preoccupied with putting food on the table and paying their bills, but on the other hand, there was a big build-up to this photo op that they had in Singapore with Kim Jong-un, and now we're learning that it looks like Kim Jong-un has accelerated his nuclear program. He's making as much nuclear bomb fuel as he can, and they're apparently building new facilities to build more missiles. So if at the end of the day, the very fact that, as you've suggested, that this is theater, this is almost like reality TV writ large on the world stage, is it possible that there's a learning curve there for the American people to recognize that there's no substance to what's happening? In fact, at the end of the day, this may be damaging, dignifying dictators while trashing allies?
Well, I think we know there has been a response from certain segments of the American public. Certainly most foreign policy professionals, including most Republican foreign policy professionals, see quite clearly what's going on and don't approve. But as you say, unless you're in a kind of active war situation with lots of Americans serving abroad, foreign policy is not in itself a key issue. But I think what is important is the way in which President Trump tries to use the immigration issue, barring foreigners and, of course, scapegoating minorities, especially from Mexico, to maintain the support of his base. That's the way in which foreign policy is playing out politically at home. And the other way has to do with his cockamamie economic approach of tariffs and creating a tariff war, not only with our allies like Canada, Mexico, but also with China. And there might actually be an economic pinch. And if I had to make a prediction about how foreign affairs will impinge on our elections, I think it's going to be in the economic field, because I think what they're doing in tariffs is going to come back to bite them, and that might actually affect more centrist voters.
Well, the trade war that Trump is initiating, starting with China, but then spreading to the EU and even Canada, the Canadians are furious. I mean, I'm talking about the people, and obviously that puts pressure on the leader. And do you think that's happening across Europe as well, that the Europeans are furious as this?
Well, I mean, certainly some are, and I think he's already, burned his bridges with Merkel and now with Macron. I mean, Macron tried and got nothing. But those are, more democratic leaders. He's trying to, maintain his relations with the more autocratic ones like Orbán and Hungary or the young leader in Austria. So I think it's, it's what I call a kind of area of contention. And I think the most important thing, and hopefully your guest before me will have more to say about the Russia angle, is whether the Mueller investigation upends this president before he ends his first term or before he can run for re-election. I think that is very important. The other key issue is going to be turnout of voters in the midterm elections. If the Democrats retake the House, then many of the issues we've been discussing in foreign affairs will be investigated in a very different way, because you'll have Democratic control of House committees, and they will start looking behind these relationships and then making it public. And then it's going to have a lot more political resonance than just people responding to pictures of Trump on the news or his tweets.
So what do you think, though, apart from something nefarious like a Manchurian candidate or some leverage because of money that the Russian mobsters have been funneling through Trump properties for the longest time, whatever these ties are, hopefully we'll learn more from the Mueller investigation. But what explains the ties or the affection that these European leaders are expressing and indulging in, like Orbán, and particularly the Kurz, as you mentioned, in Austria? And of course, Strache is a horrible guy who's a power behind the scenes in Austria. They've been influencing the next door Bavarian party that's causing Merkel so much trouble. So what explains, why do those people feel so affectionate towards Russia, given the history going back to through the Cold War, even to World War II?
Part of it, part of that is kind of a mystery. I mean, obviously, they've got their own self-interest, which is they want to govern in an autocratic manner. And Putin's been very supportive, as you know, of right-wing parties throughout Europe. We recently learned that Russian money was involved in the Brexit campaign. So weakening the EU works to the benefit of, say, a leader like Orbán, because a strong EU is going to then question how he's governing his own country. There's a very good article in the current issue of Foreign Affairs by Celeste Wallander, who had been President Obama's chief Russia advisor, suggesting that some NATO members could be suspended, like Hungary, if they don't support democracy. And a strong NATO or a strong EU would clamp down on some of those tendencies. But we have Putin and Trump undermining both alliances. That's obviously in the interests of the particular autocrats. And it's a very, I think, unpleasant and difficult time in international affairs. And how long it continues is going to depend a lot on what people do here in the United States, both the Mueller investigation and in the midterms.
But the other country, of course, that's drifting to the right is Poland, and while they're obviously deeply suspicious of the Russians, since the leader in Poland's twin brother died in a plane crash in Russia to honor the Polish officers that were murdered by Stalin on Stalin's orders. Nevertheless, he's at odds with the EU, particularly over stacking the Supreme Court and lowering the age of judges to get rid of all the judges he doesn't want, and then he's putting in his own people, and that's violating the EU standards. And at the end of the day, the EU could suspend Poland.
Right. And then NATO could too. But that requires, a strong and relatively united EU, and it also would require, I think, strong support from the United States. But there's a very good book by a man named Tim Schneider, who's a Yale historian, called The Road to Unfreedom, about the U.S., Russia, and Eastern Europe, which I recommend to your listeners. It's a bit more detailed and nuanced even than Madeline's book on fascism. And it really goes into these kind of developments you've been describing in Poland and in Austria and Hungary. And one of the also sad parts about it goes back to President Bush's invasion of Iraq and destabilizing the Middle East. One of the factors that made it easier for autocrats to come to power in Europe has been the refugee crisis out of Syria, Libya, and that, we bear a large part of responsibility in terms of what the American government did.
Well, but remember, just in closing, Ambassador Scherer, the NATO leader at the time, or the SACEUR, the head of NATO at the time, said that Putin was weaponizing refugees, because the refugee outflow that affected Europe came shortly after Putin intervened with troops in Syria. And my understanding is that they basically, Assad just said, get out or we'll kill you, and gave them safe passage, and all these people were dumped on Europe. And again, that's helped Putin destabilize Western Europe.
Absolutely. I mean, destabilizing of European institutions, and particularly of the strong Western alliances, the EU and NATO, are in Putin's view of his interests, and he, I think, falsely's view of Russian national interests. And sadly, Trump's going along with this. So, I think the show in Helsinki should be met with humor and derision by my friends, the Finns.
Well, Ambassador Scherer, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you, Ian.
And again, I've been speaking with Derek Scherer, who's a former U.S. ambassador to Finland, who is currently a professor of diplomacy and world affairs at Occidental College, where he serves as director of the McKinnon Center for Global Affairs. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Alejandra Larivalat. This program is available for podcasting at backgroundbriefing.org. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow. Bye for now.